Thank you, Chief Justice Cherry, and may I please support Dan Holzberg for the City of Las Vegas. This case is a little bit, teeny bit different from the case that we just heard, in the sense that Judge Kadish decided it on collateral estoppel and issue preclusion principles. And again, this issue, the idea, and she deferred to, Judge Kadish deferred to Judge Delaney's ruling that the language in the patent deed using subject to rather than reserve did not convey an easement. And so here, that issue was never raised in this case except on the supplement having to do with collateral estoppel. It was never raised until the oral argument in the other case. So this is really the first chance that any court has to address the subject to language. Although technically the issue of collateral estoppel is in front of this court, I don't think either side has argued it. They don't mention collateral estoppel in their brief, and only mention issue preclusion in the historical sense of what Judge Kadish did. And since you have both cases in front of you now, we're really talking in terms of stare decisis rather than collateral estoppel. Let's look at the language in this provision that we have here. And we see that there is subject to appears twice, and reserved appears twice. And when the federal government is saying reserved, they're talking about rights that they are specifically reserving to themselves, such as mineral rights and the rights to build ditches and canals. When they use subject to, they're talking about rights that they're leaving for third parties, just as I explained in the last case. The federal government was setting out that some rights they are keeping, and used the word reservation, and setting out that some rights they are leaving for other people. And when they used it in that context, they didn't use the word reserve, because they weren't reserving it to themselves, so they used the phrase subject to. So here what we're talking about is a patent that is subject to a right of way not exceeding 33 feet along. This one says boundary, but in the Blue Waters case, the patents all used plural boundaries of said land. And Justice Pickering, you asked in the last case, is there any case that in a federal small tract act has ever found this not to create an easement? I don't know of a single one, and the respondents haven't cited them. So this language, subject to, creates a right of way, creates an easement. And I think that is as far as Judge Delaney got in a substantive ruling, and I think that is also as far as Judge Kadish ever got in saying that issue preclusion apply here. And I think that is just incorrect, that we do have an easement.
So necessarily the decision to be made in the shadows will have a significant impact on the decision that we will render in this case.
And I think you can decide the two rulings together. I at one point moved to consolidate them. I think you can consolidate them for a decision. I'd like that you didn't consolidate them for oral argument, because that gives me twice as much time.
And Mr. Holzberg, what are the genuine issues of material fact in any of the waters?
Here's what the genuine issue, and they're the same in both cases. We move for summary judgment saying, here's the law, we have an easement, we're just utilizing the easement, we're not taking anything, even if we are taking. We aren't taking any rights that they have in that great line from Sisolak, the bundle of sticks that are the rights of the property owner. They don't have the right sticks to utilize that land. So whatever we would be taking from them is a minimal value, $100. Now, that is our argument on the law. They came in and said, no, the law is different, it isn't an easement, you are taking. And so pay us $15.50 for all the land per square foot. And we came back and said, no, if the land we are taking includes the 33-foot strip, then the valuation for that, there is a question of fact. What is that property worth? We say it's nothing. if we're right on the law. If we are wrong on the law, which I don't think we get to, then the issue is, what is that proper divorce?
But in the opposition to the summary judgment request, I guess both cases, did the city come in and say, wait a minute, even if you don't agree with us on the taking issue, the value is not $1,550 a foot, it's $750 a foot, or something like, did you challenge that in the summary judgment context?
We challenged it in the district court, both before the judge's rulings and after the judge's rulings. We didn't set out exactly what it would be, but we did say it wouldn't be the $1,550.
Didn't your expert affidavit say that it was worth $100 and that would be the placer?
Yes.
So it was worth $100, that was the fair value if you were to assign any value at all?
The entire 33-foot strip, yes, across all, across each parcel would be worth $100.
And that value wasn't contested by either respondent?
You know, to give them the benefit, I think their argument essentially was, if we are taking it, then we don't have an easement, then it has some property over $100. So I would have to say that both sides opposed summary judgment to the other party, but essentially on legal grounds. If I'm right on my legal position, I should get summary judgment. If they're right on their legal position, there are questions about it.
But did you say that in opposition to their partial summary judgment motion, that they could not take the $1,550 a square foot and use that valuation for the 33 feet?
We said it before judgment was entered. I'm trying to remember the difference between the two cases now. One was a motion, I think Cliff Shadows was a motion for partial summary judgment, and then a motion for full summary judgment, since the judge had come to a different legal interpretation than we did. And that, Justice Hardesty, is why I think they were not entitled to summary judgment on value, because that's still left the question. In Albert Robinson, Sisolak, here's where I think Judge Delaney was saying that there is some constitutional idea, somewhat like the pistol initiative, that if you take something, you have to pay full fee value. And I think she was relying on Albert and Robinson there. But remember, in Albert, it had to do with a future right-of-way under a master plan. And in Robinson, it had to do with the future dedication if they ever developed the property. We're not dealing with the future. We're dealing with established rights. We're dealing with the fact that when they received the patent deed, the rights to build the road were already carved out. And it was carved out of it as part of an extensive federal policy of utilizing public lands by private individuals in ownership and leases and by local governments in building roads to incentivize intensive, and that's the word that's used repeatedly, intensive utilization of this land, and to take the burden away from local governments and having to pay for all this. Mr. Chief Justice, if I may reserve the remaining 7 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good morning. Good morning.
May it please
the Court, Jefferson Lesner, on behalf of the land respond. With respect to the use of the court, this court, as it relates to issue conclusion, while it is true that to the extent this court were to reverse Judge Delaney on the issues that were deeply and may well still affirm on the issue of whether or not the government can see the scope of that easement, in this case, this court addresses motions for summary judgment de novo and may affirm on the basis that is supported by the record. The government has made an admission in this case, at least in connection with the oral argument, in their reply brief, and the commission is as follows. Every case that they have cited from Arizona interpreting the small tract act has stated that this case is based upon necessity, which Justice Pickering suggested in the companion case that the subject to language was nothing more than an easement by necessity. Once that necessity has been satisfied, there no longer exists an easement. In the reply brief before this court, the city has stated that all of the cases, in fact, that the permanent state of law in the state of Arizona, is that you must show necessity for the use of that 33 feet. And that is the 2008 decision of Miller versus Brown. In this case, they have stated that Nevada doesn't impose such a necessity requirement with respect to that 33 feet. The language clearly is ambiguous with respect to whether or not the use was granted, and if so, what the scope of that use is. The cases indicate that to the extent that there is a necessity for access, utility and vehicular access to interior landlocked parcels, an easement exists.
Would it have been necessary to articulate that in the patent fee? Easements by necessity are implied because of the need. So my follow-up question is, if this easement stated in the patent grant is simply an easement by necessity, why put it in there at all?
It was to make certain that not just the government, but any interior landlocked parcels have the ability to look to the language of the patent to put on notice, if you will, all parties to the chain of title, that property, although it was conveyed in fee simple, was subject to the rights of interior landlocked parcels to cross that property so that they could have access to the property, because only when they had access to the property could they intensively utilize those public lands. Public lands does not mean public or lands owned by individuals or the public as a whole. It was the federal lands that were the public lands that were the subject of the small tract act. And in order to allow the transfer or the conveyance of those public lands back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, they had to have the federal operative authorization to do so. That act was passed so that landowners who came to the West would have the statutory ability to acquire and then develop that property. Absent that language, that subject to language, that would be forced part of the easement by necessity without having some intent that was articulated by the authorizing grant.
Could you comment on the argument, and I didn't see it in the briefs, but I heard it orally a moment ago from Mr. Paulsenberg, that really this reservation, the scope of what may be done in terms of the roadway depends on who's asserting the right. If it's a public trust roadway, it can be any kind of road in the 33 feet. If it's merely a private party who's asserting it, it's more in the nature of an easement by necessity. Is that supportable? Why or why not?
It is not supportable, and I think this will take guidance in the SOC when much to expense. Is when you're interpreting the easements in favor of government, you have to interpret very narrowly and only grant as much as necessary to effect with the public purpose. Interestingly enough, although the city relies upon the Neil Brown dissenting opinion in its argument, the dissenting judge stated that there is no language within the reservation to suggest that there is an alternative definition or scope with respect to 33 feet. And that's what they're arguing today. That's exactly what was argued in Neil versus Brown in the lower court. And ultimately, the appellate court stated that it was the easement is circumscribed by its intent. The intent was to provide access to the interior parcels. The idea that it's two different easements is not supported by the language in the patent itself. It just simply says subject to 33 feet. And because simply, you just have to look to the intent of the statute itself. The only guidance we have with respect to what was intended is the instruction amendment and the follow-up amendment from the BLM. And it is crystal clear, not disputed, that the BLM is taking the position that there is no public purpose associated with that 33-foot reservation or easement or dedication. Rather, it is circumscribed or limited or restricted to the landowners who are small tract parcel owners who can't get to their property. This provides them the access.
You asked the question earlier, Mr. Warren, I asked you the same question. What are we to ascribe to the fact that the BLM, is this an internal meeting only? Is this something that should be published in a conventional record? Do we call force and effect? And why should we give it more free to us?
It certainly is the agency. It's a regulation that's not contained within the statute itself. It's a regulation that is reserved for the Department of Interior and not the BLM to insert that language. And so what we're asking is what is the agency's interpretation of its own regulation? And the cases that we've cited state that an agency's interpretation of its own regulation is entitled to deference, great deference. In fact, should be followed unless there's plainly erroneous. And so we look to what the BLM understood with respect to the intent of the regulation. And it is no clearer than the language itself. It says the intent of the act is to provide access to utilities and accessibility to the affected tracts. The affected tracts are those that are being conveyed to the small tract act. It goes on to say there is no apparent public purpose for governmental use contemplated except to carry out the purpose of the small tract act to provide intensive utilization of public lands, other lands being not owned by individuals privately, but that was owned by the federal government that was then transferred down.
But when we agreed with the last line, the document provided as an application, or doesn't make those same references, just gives us this path, the subject to the right of way documents. It's not as definitive as you're telling us in terms of.
Well, it is, and it's, I mean, to the extent that the word public qualifies utilities, we know that the intent was to provide communities to the public, to the government, to provide the public utilities. The reason why the roadways is not qualified is because it may well be private individuals within the landlocked areas that are accessing that property, like Bernal, and the University Ground, or it might be the government who at some point in time want to install roadways. Understand in this case, in the four condition, there was adequate access to the property. That is a fact that has not been disputed. Although the government did not state that the purpose of this action was to provide access or utilities to small tract parcels. It didn't state that it was intended to expand access to small tract parcels. It stated that it was a taking of the property without reference to the easement. Only in opposition to the motion for summary judgment did they state that they had this unqualified right to use the easement. That was duties were amended. Right? They didn't then even argue at that point in time in summary judgment that it was intended to increase or intensify or defend the small tract parcels. Never before have they argued that they need this patent for this 33 feet to provide the intensive utilization of small tract parcels, except for a reference in their brief that states that there are 137 small tract parcels that are running this 3.5 to 4 mile expansion. But they concede, again in their brief, that all of these properties have been intensively developed for residents, commercial, or otherwise. They concede that there was access in the before condition to all those properties that had been small tract parcels that have been developed. The point is that adequate access existed, and what they have done, or what they're attempting to do, is to exceed the scope of that reservation or dedication as the BLM state, so that they can provide a benefit to the public as a whole. That's what they said in their complaint. That's what they said in their opposition. Only now do they say it, because they now must realize that Brown versus Neal circumscribed the area for necessity. Now they say, for the first time, well, look at the BLM records, there's 137 different parcels. Again, those parcels then and today have adequate legal access. Whether it's an easement or a dedication is of really no import in this case, because in this case, there's undisputed factually it's under judgment that there was adequate legal access. They haven't cited a single case, not one, that says you can exceed the scope of that for a public purpose, because if you do, then it's taking. It's entitled to the rights to just compensation.
But counsel, I hear what you're saying, but by the same token, I understand that in the arguments it was asked for that in summary judgment document, which conclusion should apply based on the documents. So does it come to us part of that argument come into play? It's a sort of clear as the principles.
Well, certainly to the extent that, and again, just when you found that there was taking, and certainly those arguments are also applicable in this case. But again, to reiterate, even if Judge Lane was wrong with respect to the application of Sisal Act, Robinson, and Alvis, that doesn't end either with this court, because this court may look to the record as a whole and affirm on any basis. And the point is that if it is in fact an easement, and it is running to the benefit of the city, it is still circumscribed by the purpose of the city. Because remember, there is no public purpose associated with this 33 feet. Every case, including the 2008 decision from the University of Brown, says it is limited by necessity. By necessity. They concede that it is not necessary to build this road for any small tract parcel. There are no interior landlocked parcels that need adequate access. It's not been alleged. There's no fact below that it suggests otherwise. They have conceded access existed, but they are arguing as a matter of law that they have the right to utilize the 33 feet unfettered. And they don't. The Moss case tells us that it is limited to a purpose for which it's granted, the BLM tells us. The Alaska Supreme Court case tells us, the Brown tells us, it is limited to the need to provide adequate access to small tract parcels. Adequate access in this case exists. There is no effect, and the court will find that as a matter of law, that the issue gives rise to a taking, the action gives rise to a taking, the only main issue is value. And as it relates to value, they provided an appraisal that says 1550. The appraiser said, well, you don't apply that to the property within 33 feet because it's subject to that dedication. But if we have suggested that dedication no longer is necessary because of the first use, if you will, then there is no basis to differentiate that portion of property and the other portion of property. It's 1550 across the board. For all those reasons, we would suggest that the district court order be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice.
6 minutes and 4 cents.
I don't have to address necessity, but I will. The reason I don't have to address necessity is they never moved for summary judgment on this part. They moved on a number of different arguments that were unrelated to this. And then today, they come up here and say, we never proved necessity. And in the oral argument in front of Judge Kamish, they said at page 352 of the record that there's been no suggestion that we needed this for access to other patentees. Well, that's a funny way to get something. It's not to raise an issue and then say that we didn't dispute. They raised this idea of need or necessity in their reply, and it wasn't the basis of their motion for summary judgment. And that's why counsel says that I only for the first time on appeal pointed out the number of parcels. In that 2 square mile area, there are 137 small tract act parcels. And we're talking about access to them. We're not talking about the landowner's access to his own property. We're not talking about a walking trail. Even their argument is that it's public access. And we're not talking about a particular parcel. We're talking about all the parcels. We're talking about the public need to incentivize, as even they admit, an intensive utilization of all this public land that has been sold, excuse the expression, dirt cheap to these patentees so that we could expand growth in the West. There are 11,612 small tract neck parcels in Clark County alone. And for them to come in here and say that I haven't made a showing to defeat summary judgment when they never asked for it, it just defies procedure and logic. And they are wrong too on the law. I don't need to show necessity. I'm not going for an easement of necessity. I don't need to say that this parcel we're talking about is unserved by a road. In the Berno case, even when we were talking in the Arizona case, Berno versus Lopes, even then when it was talking about a right of a private individual to a private right of way where there was access on the eastern side of the property, the court said he could get access to the western side of the property as well and dedicate the right of way. But more important, and more to the point, we're talking about public use here. And public necessity, certificates of necessity in hospitals, and roadways, and all these things that we're that the municipalities have to care about, is vastly different than the idea of an easement of necessity. And in the case I mentioned in the last case, the City of Phoenix versus Kennedy case, the 1983 Kennedy 1 case, they utilize the right-of-way for improvement of an existing roadway, just like we're doing here. And not once did that opinion talk about necessity. And not once did it talk about it. The issue isn't raised here. If it were raised here, I win.
I guess so this is why I posed the question about whether there are factual questions.
Well, I don't think there are factual questions on this issue, because it wasn't raised. They move for summary judgment on them.
Well, I understand that. That's why I posed the question. Yeah. I didn't recall seeing that. But right. The question that I do think I had, if I look question about the scope should probably be resolved by the introduction of facts dealing with whether the purposes and objectives of this encumbrance can be satisfied by the familiar means.
Normally, as an appellant, if one were to suggest that we could reverse a summary judgment against me and go on remand to have it more fully resolved, I would like. But I don't think here there even is a question, not whether there's a question of fact, but whether there's a genuine issue of material fact. Did we exceed the easement? The easement is for a road. And that is exactly what we're building for. It is the purpose of the easement to have public access to intensive utilization of all these public lands? Yes. And I think as a matter of law, you can say that that's what the purpose is, rather than this court biting on their last minute coming up with a new argument. I mean, the issues in this case are pretty simple. And they keep trying, both sets of respondents keep trying to change the battlefield, desperate to find an argument here. Did we exceed the scope? We exceeded the scope by needing 40 feet instead of 33. And we are willing to pay for the 7 feet. And I think in every other way, under the Arizona cases, and even under the Alaska cases, we are complying with the purpose of the rights of way under the Federal Small Tract Act. They argue that this easement should be interpreted narrowly, and that they're relying on SOC versus Mirage. No. The law is clear, not just from the cases I cited, but Supplemental Statutory Construction, Section 64:7. When we're dealing about with public grants of land, we don't construe the grant against the grantor. We and in favor of the grantee. We construe it in favor of the public. And that's what we're talking about here, our public rights. Justice Douglas, again, on the BLM documents. I don't, all those BLM, late BLM documents that they presented are after the fact. And basically, what the Department of the Interior is saying is, we're not in this fight. We didn't reserve anything to us. But even there, they're talking about the same, those two documents that they're relying on, even though there are references to many more, talk about the same positions that I am talking about. Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Lister. Thank you for your arguments and views on this matter. This matter stands submitted. The court can recess for 1 minute.